This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did-we-just-hit-a-million-orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
Hello, hello, hello. Welcome to the TFA Dino Show. I'm Robbie Jeffries here with my bestest buddy, Thomas Alexander Corson. Tom, that's your middle name, right?
That was a guess.
I took a shot.
I ain't telling you shit.
What's mine?
Alex. Yeah, I mean, it's your wife's name. I mean, obviously, that's what you went with. Your first name is it's Robbie Jeffrey Jeffries.
Okay, we'll go with that.
Or Alshon.
This is not the episode over middle names, but it is the episode over rookie running back prospects. That's right, running backs. It's the position where you're told you have to have three workhorse backs, except there's only five in the entire league, but yet you have to have three on your dynasty teams. We're going to see if we can help with that at all. You know, Tom, I feel like we, you know, are semi-informed on the incoming class. You know, we've dug into the tape a little bit. We've checked out the production profiles. We've heard some draft capital rumblings, right? And we've even peeped at the performances in the NFL combine, but we're not really that smart about this stuff. You know,
amateur hour right here. Amateur hour.
No, we're just unintelligent heads talking. We were talking about pre-show about the Skip Baylesses of the world. We are just talking Skip Baylesses at this point. So you know what we did?
You are the Skip Bayless.
You're the Skip Bayless.
No, okay, I'm the other guy.
You don't even know the other guy, so you can't be the other guy.
Doesn't matter. I'm not him.
Tom, what if I told you that by some act of God, we got a guy that knows this topic, that breathes the topic of prospects, that has been in the Devy landscape. What if I told you he was going to be on this episode with us tonight?
The only thing that would make it better was if he would be an Eagles fan.
Oh, and this always happens, right? Anybody we bring on, I don't know how it happens. Every year, you guys come out of the woodworks. This time of year, you're like, little squirrel, little gopher popping your head up. I don't know how you guys do this, but Tom put a lid on your vino. I haven't seen it out yet. I'm assuming it's somewhere.
There's none. We're going sober tonight.
Well, I'm pumped up, really ecstatic to have Brandon Lejeune. I hope I pronounced that correctly. He is the host of the Devy Deep Dive podcast, creator of the Devy Dashboard. He has his own YouTube channel, Devy to Dynasty Football. And he's even coined the phrase, intangibles matter. Ladies and gentlemen, and Tom as well, please welcome Brandon Lejeune. Brandon, thank you for being on with us, man.
Hey, it's my pleasure, guys, and some local Philly boys. I'm all in. So that was quite an intro. I think you guys know more than what you're leading on to believe, but I'm excited to talk about the running back class. Like you said, and Debbie, we've been watching these guys for the last 2 years. And here we are about a little over a month away from the NFL draft and, you know, ready to put our final takes on this running back class to see what we got as we go into our rookie drafts.
Yeah, I, I, I'm hoping that we don't disappoint you with our knowledge, but we're going to be asking the questions and kind of diving back and forth. But before we get into the rookie running backs, because there's a ton to get to, so I do want to get to that. You're, you know, I'm just watching your channels and seeing the background. I see and sense that you're kind of a fisherman. And as a guy from South Dakota, where fishing, you know, is part of a lot of people's hobbies. Just curious if you can enlighten some people. What's the secret? What's the secret to being a good fisherman? How'd you get into it? Tell us a little bit about that.
I think the secret is just spending time on the water. It's like anything else. The more you're on the water, the more knowledge you get of the different species. I got into fishing when I was a young kid, and it really is my true passion. As much as I love my Devi and film work and my podcast, I'm going to be actually heading out to the river next Tuesday afternoon. So I'm already going to hit it here in early March. So love being on the water, being out in nature, and yeah, do a little salt water, fresh water, but yeah, it's very relaxing. So
which river you like, where are your estuaries? So
my estuaries are, my primary estuaries are the Susquehanna River in the central PA, mm-hmm. in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania, and, yep. Trenton, New Jersey. I'm on the Delaware River early spring. And then I do a lot of, you know, backwater salt marshes in the Jersey backwaters. So yeah, I'm kind of salt and freshwater. I love it.
Are you doing some ice fishing as well, or not diving into that?
Not around here. No, the ice isn't safe, and I hate the cold. So, you know, yeah, no ice fishing for me. Hang it up into, you know, come late November. But
yeah,
I usually try and hit the stripers. My cousin has a boat, so I
usually definitely striper fishing. Yeah, yep. Yeah, that's a big fall fishery down in Jersey. So I'm down there all the time. Yeah.
No, my bachelor party, we got a nice charter there. I caught a thresher. That was nice. That was a good fight.
I'm sure. Hey, you know, you wouldn't know it, but in Trenton, New Jersey, the first week of May, I'm there every year. The big breeders swim all the way from the ocean all the way up to New Hope, Pennsylvania. And really? we intersect them in Jersey. We caught last year out in May, the first week, I probably in one day caught probably 12, 15 to 20 pound stripers.
Wow.
They're huge. They're full of eggs. Yeah, well, they're full of eggs. They're running up the river, and they're going up to spawn, and they come up in these huge schools. Sometimes you get three or four on at a time, so it's pretty good fishery that really not a lot of people fish.
Yes. Well, that's good insight. I like to learn about that stuff, you know, because I'm the South Dakota kid who didn't have that background. My dad's a car salesman. He didn't hunt. He didn't fish. I'm like the one weird kid from South Dakota that didn't do any of that stuff. So. Appreciate you kind of walking us through some stuff. And hey, Tom threw out a couple of big words. I didn't know he knew what estuary was. Like, let's go. Yeah. This is.
I mean, I'm a Marine that has a master's degree. I'm a walking oxymoron, not just a moron. So, I mean, what are you going to do?
That's awesome. Guys, we have a ton of running backs to get into. And I kind of want to set the table here. Or actually have you, Brandon, kind of set the table, because we're going over your tiers, right? And I think we have four to get through. It's 16-ish, 15-ish players, something like that. But just kind of off the rip, talk to us about kind of your process, right? We have analytics guys, we have tape guys, we have people that kind of mesh it all together. They rank them, they tier them, you know, give them certain analytical grades or numbered film grades. You know, can you give us a quick summary of like how your tiers get made?
Yeah, I'm first and foremost a film guy. I always have. I got into really developing my YouTube channel with the frustration level of just being able to see highlight clips. And I've been burned many, many times just watching highlight films of players. And I think this can be very misleading. So I started doing full game films and then actually started cutting up film and really trying to analyze it. You know, I've been watching a lot of videos over the years. I've been doing this for about 6-7 years of every scouting video, how to scout player videos out there. So, you know, focus, at least from the running back standpoint, I'm always kind of, my main primary focus is vision and lateral ability. And then, of course, burst and acceleration that go hand in hand. You know, I think size matters for the NFL. If you really look at the NFL running backs that have been successful, most are 210 higher. There are a few guys in there that are a little less, so they're going to have to bring something else to the table. You know, I look at their athletic profile, you know, the combine information. I certainly kind of use that as a way of confirming what I see on the field, but I don't try and go overboard either one way or the other with the results of that, because I do think those players train for those specific drills. So as fast as somebody might look in their 40, I'm a guy who values play speed over 40 speed. If I see a guy on the field take, you know, with the defenders making bad angles and that sort of type of thing on the field, then I'm going to kind of value that more than a guy running in shorts with no pads on, running in a straight line.
Right.
And then I think the production profile is important too. I think, you know, how productive have they been throughout the career? It kind of tells you that if they have been, then they've been, you know, somewhat successful in the higher echelons of the running backs. And then I think the final piece is what we're all waiting for is really draft capital.
Yep.
Because draft capital matters, right? So I just kind of project draft capital, and I'm more of a tier ranker than a 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. So yes, I have these four tiers, and within those four tiers, I have them ranked, but I don't really go by the rankings so much. It's kind of, if I'm in a rookie draft and I'm going to take a running back, I'm going to probably grab one out of my tier two if all the tier one guys are gone, then, you know, if I got tier two guys, then I'm going to try and target one of those guys. And, you know, landing spots matter. Of course, talent overrides really that as far as landing spot. But as we know, opportunity for running backs is huge in the NFL. So there's probably been a lot of running backs over the years that have been maybe decent backs that just maybe haven't gotten the opportunity. But I think that's going to change a little bit with all the dual backs that we're seeing, you know, the two or three guys running out of the backfield now. I mean, our Eagles are doing the same thing with Miles Sanders and Boston Scott and, you know, trying to get Gainwell involved. So, I mean, I think that's the trend, but those five things, the film grade, you know, always will lean to the bigger back unless there's a really great pass catcher who I think, you know, from a PPR standpoint and on our dynasty rosters will be an asset that will, you know, be maybe a flex player, but always kind of lean towards the bigger backs, you know, and then the athletical and productional profiles and then the draft capital. So I try and put that all together. Really don't have some formula where I put it all in a spreadsheet and then I just rank them based on numbers. I tier them and then just kind of put them in the order within the tiers that I think I would most likely take them in a rookie draft.
So what's your cutoff when we talk like draft capital? Because I feel like that's something people kind of confuse sometimes is like, okay, they have to be taken in the, you know, first or second round. Third and fourth round okay for you? Is the fifth where it kind of gets quirky?
I think first off, first round, if you go back and look at history, those players are going to get an opportunity without a doubt, yeah. Right? But I think most people, if you get day two draft capital, the second and third round, you're pretty solid. And then, you know, if you can get early day three, I think you might have a chance. I think 5, 6, 7, it's a long shot. And undrafted free agents, I mean, Eckler is the outlier in that entire UDFA kind of making it toward dynasty rosters. I think I know Elijah Mitchell, I forget, was he was a fifth or sixth round last year. But if you go back and look at last year's draft and all the running backs that were drafted, the majority of them, you know, they might end up as a flex player on our roster as a fill in. And you took him in your fifth round of your rookie draft last year. And you're just hoping that he hits for a few weeks while the starter gets injured. But draft capital matters in the NFL. You know, you go back and same thing with wide receivers. I was just doing a show last night. I was on with Kyle from the Undroppables doing kind of a wide receiver show. And it was the same thing. We went back and looked at the last four drafts in the wide receiver. And all the receivers drafted round four and later, there was six guys in the last 5 years that have even sniffed our dynasty rosters. So draft capital matters. If you really go back and look and study, you know, you'll find that draft capital does matter. So I think round 4, 3, 2, 1 is really what you want. But you know, like last year, for example, I was a big Kylan Hill guy, probably one of my bigger misses last year from, and he came back, played very limited in 2020, got drafted last year and really liked his film at Mississippi State and everything. And, you know, he got that late day draft capital. Now he's buried on the Packers. I mean, we're never going to see him. He's droppable at this point. I mean, something will have to happen. So
tough news for one Cody Kutzer of the Fantasy Authority. He was a big Kylan Hill guy as well. But yeah, when you have that seventh round, Jay Mike as well, another buddy of ours, and it's tough. So, you know, I think that's a good place to kind of start with this because your tier one has two guys that we expect to make, you know, at least day two, maybe flirting with the end of day one. We'll see, right? And that tier one is Breece Hall at number one and Kenneth Walker at number two. And I want to start off kind of talking with Breece Hall because for a lot of people, you know, after there's questions right about his acceleration, his speed, his ability coming into the combine. And then he does really well in the combine. And I feel like a lot of people kind of shifted their minds and they said, okay, he's the clear number one in a tier by himself. Who does he compare to in other classes? Like they're, I'm not saying they're too high on him because I'm still kind of figuring out where I'm at with him, but for you having him in a tier with Kenneth Walker, it feels like either you're that high on Kenneth Walker as well, or maybe you're not jumping to the heights other people have post combine. Maybe talk to me about that juxtapose of the, having them near each other.
Yeah. Well, I'm just, yeah. Good word there. The, I mean, as a Debbie guy, I mean, Breece Hall and Kenneth Walker have been a top tier running back for me since, you know, October, November. I mean, when Kenneth Walker transferred and, you know, went to Michigan State, and I mean, Christ's first game, he had, you know, four touchdowns, I think, and just blew up that first week. I mean, it was insanity.
It was his first carry, I think, was a 7-yard touchdown.
Yeah, yep. Or something. So, you know, I would think that after round, after the fifth or sixth week, the production was there. He has the size, you know, he really impressed with the 40 time to confirm everything. But Breece Hall and Kenneth Walker have been arguably the two best running backs in college football last year. You know, that's the benefit of playing Debbie, is that you see these players in for the last year. So for me now, for guys that are just starting to look at the running backs, that 40 time at the combine might have put them up top, but most of the Debbie guys, you know, on my Slack chat, on my Debbie dashboard, I mean, he's been our number one back we've been talking about for months. So they're both explosive players. They both obviously confirm the speed that you see, but again, I'm a more play speed over 40 time speed. Both explosive, shifty, both can catch the, well, Kenneth Walker didn't catch the ball much in college, but I don't necessarily look at that as a knock on a player. I think that's a narrative that can be kind of overblown at times. Just because they didn't catch the ball in college doesn't mean that they can't in the NFL. It means that perhaps they just didn't use that system in college. So,
but can I jump in right there?
Sure.
How do you know? Because that's thrown around a lot. It's like when your guy doesn't catch the ball in college, you say, oh, well, they didn't ask him to do it. But when you don't like a guy, it's like, oh, he can't catch. He didn't hit that 20, 25 catch in a season. How do you find that out? You know the system. You're watching, okay, this is, you know, this is the system they ran where they didn't go through. If they were in trouble with quarterbacks taking off, or they're checking down with a good slot wide receiver, how do you know?
I can't say that I do, right? I have no knowledge of that. I don't get that in depth of looking at these offensive systems. I don't have time for that with all these players and all these teams and that type of thing. I just know that when you watch his film and you've seen him catch the ball, I try and figure out how natural does it look. Is he catching the ball with his hands? Has he had the opportunity to make some good adjustments while catching the ball? So let's say Kenneth Walker, I don't know off the top of my head how many balls he actually caught last year, but I do remember watching a lot of his film where he had to make some adjustments, even if it's coming out of the flat, even if it's going down or like on a 5-yard out, or, you know, a dump off, you know, he's in for blocking and the blocking breaks down and the quarterback rushes around or scrambles and tries to make a play off platform, and he's there and can catch the ball. You try and look for hints on guys that weren't involved in the passing game. I mean, 50% of these backs probably really weren't involved in the passing game, but it's not going to deter an NFL team from taking a player because they didn't catch the ball in college. So especially for a guy at the top tier who has the size like he has and the elusiveness and the contact balance and burst and stuff, they'll get somebody else on the field and in the backfield, I think, to take care of those catches and passes, just like Nick Chubb, right? I mean, what did he catch, like maybe one catch a week or something, or maybe, you know, one every other week?
His over under on props for receptions every single week is 1.5.
Yeah. So
you can just book it, and then he's going to hit it about 50% of the time.
That's right. Right. So Kenneth Walker may be one of those. Now they might find when he gets into camp that he's got soft hands and it just wasn't really used. But I do know, and I don't know what teams, and I can't really define them. I know they're, because there's guys on my Slack that chat that know a lot more than I do when it comes down to these offensive systems, where an offensive coordinator will come to a college team and they'll immediately say, I mean, we're talking about it right now, just with all the player transfers. You know, we're talking about coaches transfers and this coach going to this offense. What does it mean for this running back? Oh, you know, they're going to now not have a bell cow because this offensive coordinator likes to run four or five backs instead of just having a bell cow. So I do know that college systems scheme to throw passes to the running back and some don't as much. So I just try not to hold it against the player unless I watch his film and he looks like he's got brick hands and just cannot catch anything. Well, then it might be a concern. And so I would focus more on that as a concern on the tier two and tier three guys. But when you got a guy like Kenneth Walker, who's up at the top of the list because of his ability to move the ball down the field through running the ball, you can't knock a guy at the top tier for that.
Yeah. Plus you have to look at game script and how good was the team as well. So like,
sure.
Was a good team. They had leads. So he got the ball 263 times to run instead. You know what I mean? But yeah, so going back to him, he exploded this year, obviously, after he came over from Wake Forest. If you watch that film, that RPO, where it's just extremely deliberate, it wasn't for him. You know what I mean? He had some where he was like flashing and everything, but he just wasn't, that wasn't what his game was. He is just a straight, give me the ball, I'm going to go. So how important do you think that offensive scheme is going to be where he gets drafted? I thought he looked really good running inside zone, some outside zone too as well. He can run the power schemes, but if he comes to a team like, we'll use the Eagles for example, where it's the RPO and he has a lot of mesh plays, I don't think that's a great fit for him, whereas Breece Hall is a much better fit for that. So how much do you kind of bake into that?
I can't say that I bake too much into that, and really I look at PFF stats. To see, I mean, they do a nice breakdown on, you know, gap versus zone runs. And when I watch film, I can clearly see which play, you know, they're running by just watching the film and the offensive lineman. And certainly, so when he played at Wake Forest, he played mostly a gap system. He comes to Michigan State. I think 77% of his carries were, you know, zone. So most colleges run zone concepts from what I understand and from what I see on film. I don't know how many NFL teams run zone or gap. I don't know about all the in-depths of those NFL teams. But if you just look at how successful he was, right? He ran Kenneth Walker from 2020 to 2021. It was clear as day because if you go back and actually watch the 2020 film on Kenneth Walker, it wasn't pretty. I mean, a lot of indecisiveness, and he was, to your point, Tom, probably working in more of a gap system, RPO, where he was supposed to run in the A gap, the B gap, whatever, and it broke down and he couldn't really adjust. Now he, you know, Michigan State is primarily in a zone, outside zone, inside zone, wherever, where he then has the ability to pick and choose what gap he wants to hit, and he excelled in that. So you're absolutely right. From the Eagles standpoint, I'm sure that those NFL scouts are really looking at those players. And when I do my film breakdowns on my YouTube channel, I always specify if they've run gap or zone, because I think a well-rounded back who has, because you'll see if you go back and look at those PFF stats, a lot of cases running backs are running almost 50-50, 60-40. So they're getting a taste of each. But for, Kenneth Walker specifically, it was primary zone he ran this year at Michigan State.
Yeah. And I want to throw this out there real quick, because Chris Johnson was awesome when he was on the Titans. Ran for 2,000 yards. That was in a power scheme. And then they switched the offensive scheme to a zone, and he was just a hot mess. And that's why I bring that up a little bit, because that scheme is going to matter. So if you have a guy like Kenneth Walker, where we already saw him just utterly fail in that mesh RPO scheme, and he goes there, I'm going to knock him down. And I have him as my RB1 right now. They're really close, but it's – I feel like he's riskier as far as like when he gets drafted, that's where he could, you know, stay as the RB1 or just drop maybe out of that top tier for me. How close do you have Breece Hall and Kenneth Walker? Am I off on that?
Oh, I don't think so. I mean, I would take Breece Hall. I just like his production better. He's had 3 years of great production. I think he's a silkier, like smoother. I mean, those are queer terms, I guess, but I mean, just, he seems so much more smooth out there, shifty. He can really catch the ball very well. His pass catching is what really probably puts him you know, over Kenneth Walker for me. I think they're both great. I'd be thrilled to have either one of them, but that pass catching, again, if we're looking at our dynasty rosters and PPR, you know, you'd be kind of silly, I don't think, not to take Breece Hall, given the fact that he's shown on tape for 3 years that he can catch the ball and be used in, you know, as part of that game. Going back to your Chris Johnson point, I think it's a really good one. And it's something that I should probably look more closely at, because I think when you run in a zone system, you have to have probably better vision than in a gap, right? If you're, you know, running a power gap and you're supposed to hit the A gap, and if it's not there, maybe the B gap, well, then you've got really two choices to make. You run that outside zone where you've got all linemen running out and you've got to make the cut and know when to go. You know, you've got to have better eyes for that. You've got to be able to have better decision-making. So, you know, you're absolutely right. I think, you know, the scheme matters for a lot of these players, but I'm just not that in depth. I just look at the skill set, you know, what I see on the field, but that's probably something I should take a closer look at.
For sure. Guys, we've hit on those two guys pretty well. Let's move to tier number two. We have Isaiah Spiller at number three, Zamir White, number four, and Brian Robinson Jr., number five. I call this your SEC tier, right? Mm-hmm. And I think pre-combine, a lot of, if you go consensus, and I use the air quotes here for the podcasters listening, would have had Isaiah Spiller up a tier with these other guys. And, you know, with some of the combine stuff, feels like he's kind of fallen out of that. Is that same for you? How much do you put combine and results into your, you talked about your tape speed versus your, you know, your 40 straight line speed, but just mm-hmm. kind of an all encompassing combine performance. Why is he in this tier? And did the combine have anything to do with that?
I think I probably put him in this tier. I mean, he could be easily in tier one at the back end, right? It's just, for me, I look at Walker and Hall and they're more bursty. They have a little bit more lateral agility, right? And I really, those are two traits that I really value in running backs. You have to create space for yourself. You have to be able to make the first guy miss. Now, Isaiah Spiller is a bulldog. I mean, he's probably got a little bit more power than those two, and he'll, you know, be a bruising running back who should, you know, be extremely successful in the NFL. And I know there's a lot of people who got a lot of shares of him on their Debbie teams, and they're surely hoping that he is. But as far as I look at Spiller, White, and Robinson in this tier, primarily for their lateral agility and their burst and speed, right? I just don't think they have the same, you know, those traits are not the same from at least what I see on film from Walker and Hall. So that's really why they're in a kind of a tier down as well.
Yeah. And Spiller is a bigger back, and he runs like it. Like my first mm-hmm. like sentence is bigger back, runs like it, not as agile as Breece.
Right.
That was literally your first sentence. You know what I mean?
Right. And if you look at really all the successful running backs, they have the dead leg, right? They have the ability to make guys miss. And the best backs in the NFL are the ones that, you know, can create that 4 or 5 yards and make guys miss, and got the vision, got the footwork, got the lower half, the contact balance and everything. He brings a lot of stuff to the table. He's going to be the third back taken in most drafts, I'm assuming. But I wouldn't be surprised if a guy like Zamir White doesn't get drafted before Spiller.
Interesting. Okay. You know? Yeah.
So it really, I mean, there's always curveballs that always kind of happen in the NFL
every draft. Year. Yep.
And so, I mean, you know, who knows? I wouldn't personally, but Zamir White, you know, is a good ball player too. Now, going back to your other question about the combine, I mean, for me, I kind of laugh when the whole, even on my Slack chat, and I tell these guys, just would you all relax? I mean, Jesus Christ, every you know, 40 time and cone drill came out, and people are like, ah, I'm moving them down my board, I'm moving them up my board. I was like, just everybody, just take it easy, you know, just relax.
Dalvin Cook, just say Dalvin Cook.
Yeah. You know, I think you look at the athleticism, the results, and you kind of look. So for me, I use the combine as athletic testing, And to say, okay, I see Breece Hall being very bursty, you know, the burst score and the speed scores kind of match. And you know, we're going to talk about a guy like, you know, Tyler Algier, a guy who came in with a lower 40 time than I read on the internet that but his play speed looked great. He got rarely got caught from behind playing at BYU, and he comes in. I think he ran a 4.6 or something like that. And everyone's everyone's off the guy now. Now, if you plug in his size and you plug in his results of the scouting combine, I mean, the analytical crowd, they're out on him, right?
Sure.
You know,
sure.
Because in their model, his size and speed score aren't great. And so people, again, if you're looking at probability, because the analytic crowd, that's what they're using numbers for, right? It's all based on probability, results of players, you know, production, athletical profile, this, that, and the other. And then they're punching it into a big formula driven thing. And then what is the probability with this guy, with these measurables, this athletic testing, this production profile, what are the chances that he makes it? And if it's low, they don't care what he looks like on film.
Right.
So, but I'll always just be a film guy first, but I do use that information, and I dropped Tyler Allgeier down. I've been a big, he was like one of my favorite backs coming into this class. And I'm not going to say that I wasn't disappointed, you know, with the 40 time, but I mean, there's a couple other things about his game that I have concerns about, but I'll tell you what, he can catch the ball out of the backfield. He's got the requisite size you want in a running back. He's big, he's physical. I think his play strength is great. And, you know, but again, that athletical testing at the combine has turned a lot of people off on him.
Tom, you got some?
We have Brian Robinson and Zamir White also in your tier. They're going to be, I think, 37 coming into the season. They've basically been playing since, you know, Zach Morris has been hitting on Kelly Kapowski, it feels like.
Ooh, let's go.
There you go. They're going to be 23 going into the season. How much does that play into your evaluation when you're going to draft running backs? Or are you just going to draft them and try and move on after 2 years or so before they turn 26?
Yeah, I don't understand. Again, this is an analytical thing that people want early breakouts, right? So people are really hung up on early production. I get it. But these two guys and their circumstances played for two programs that always ran two players, that their coaches always made them wait their turn. And in the case of Zamir White, he's been involved for, you know, basically 3 years outside of his injury, you know, early in his career. Yeah. He's been involved in the Georgia offense, but so has a lot of guys that I don't need to kind of go through the list. And same with Brian Robinson. I mean, he had to wait his turn from, you know, Najee Harris, and he patiently waited. So he never had an opportunity to showcase his skills because Najee was there for 2 years and probably said, you know what, I'm going to go back. I've been told by Saban I'm going to be the lead dog. I'm going to try and win a championship for my college team. And I don't think the NFL really gives a shit about how old these running backs are. I mean, they drafted Najee Harris in the first round last year. I mean, if they don't care, I just don't understand why us in the fantasy community care so much either. From a longevity, Najee Harris has a lot of tread on that tire, right? I mean, that was, you know, Jonathan Taylor, same thing. Now, he was an early declare as a junior, but a lot of carries. I mean, Najee Harris, to your point, Tom, if you're a Najee Harris owner, you know, answer your own question to me. Yeah. Are you going to be looking to move him earlier than because of his age?
Probably in like 2 years.
Right.
Well, but so, that's because of the second contract coming up, et cetera. Mm-hmm. We'll see, you know, how the line is, how the quarterback is with Pittsburgh. That's a tough one.
Exactly.
So with like Zamir, he's never had more than 170 touches in a season. Last time was the first time he's ever, you know, played the entire season. Brian Robinson had a lot of touches last year, but that was the first year, but he had to wait his turn, and it's a lot of talented backs. So with Zamir White's, he's the tougher eval for me because I like him more on film. But his ACLs kind of give me pause, even though he hasn't torn them. Mm-hmm. And then again, can he handle that workload?
Right. And I guess you have to ask yourself the question, who's better, right? Who out of this running back class? That's what I ask myself. Do I love the fact that he has two ACL tears? Not really. I mean, do I love the fact that he's a four-year player and he's older? Not really. But I certainly am not going to take a Jerome Ford over him. I'm not, you know, just based on skill set, just based on physicality. The guy, even with his ACL tears, his score, his testing at the combine, I think solidified the speed. Yep. has solidified his burst, his athleticism, and you bring that physicality to the table. There's going to be some guys that fade Zamir White, and I perfectly respect that for the reasons that we just discussed. But for me, I'm thinking about, you know, if I'm an NFL scout and an owner, am I concerned about that? Yeah, but he played for the SEC. He played for Georgia. He gets the Georgia bump. Brian Robinson is not the most elusive guy in the world. If there's one thing I'm worried about Brian Robinson is his lateral ability. He's a little stiff in the hips. I get it, but the kid can catch the ball out of the backfield. He's the best pass protector running back in this class. I think he's the most physical. He's a hammer. He is a hammer. And so, you know, are you going to take a guy like Jerome Ford, who kind of underwhelmed us with his weight, or Rashad White, who I'm sure I can't wait to talk about him. you know, Damian Pierce, I don't think so, right? So we've been talking about this class being not nearly as good as the 2023 class, although I argued that on my last podcast. I'd recommend you going, you know, to rehear that. I did a whole debate on the 2022 class versus 2023 and the whole narrative that 2023 is so great, you know, get rid of all your 2022 picks. So I'd pause on that whole theory and you know, you can go listen to my podcast for that. But what are the other options?
It's too late, Brandon.
It's already done. Yeah, that's okay. Well, I hope you don't get your. I hope you didn't. You didn't give up an early 2022 pick for a late first 2023. Yeah, because you're going to find yourself.
They're all late. I think one turned out to be a 109. One was a 112.
Because I think you're going to find yourself this time next year in the exact same boat that you are this year. Sure. So I kind of debunked the whole theory. Huh? Yeah, champion. Yeah. Yeah, so you know, going back to you know, finish that conversation with Wright and Robinson is, you know, are there things about their game that I don't love? Of course, but you know, that's why they're not in tier one. That's why there's a lot of questions with this running back class in general, because there's all of these guys have certain traits that look great, but they all have flaws too.
Yeah, and I think that's where we're about to get here with our tier three guys, right? And I'll let you touch on why you have, you know, not every single one. We don't want to be here for 2 hours, but maybe what kind of keeps a majority of them in this range. But for me, I'd say we have questions with some part of their game, right? You have the lighter backs that can they handle the full workload? We have the bigger backs. Can they catch the football? Can they, do they have, like we're talking about lateral agility and those things, but tier three, you have James Cook leading it off at number six, Jerome Ford, who you previously mentioned at seven, Tyler Algier at eight, Tyler Beatty at number nine, Rashad White at 10, Damian Pierce comes in at 11, Kyren Williams at 12, and then Pierre Strong Jr., love to see him jumping up here in tier three at 13. So this is a pretty big tier, and I'm guessing draft capital will kind of help shape this. Mm-hmm. The story's not written, right? We're still kind of trying to get that next piece of the puzzle. You know, maybe just walk through some of these guys. Let's start with kind of the glaring elephant in this tier in Rashad White, because I think a lot of other, again, quote unquote, consensus mocks, consensus prospect individuals would rank him higher. Why is he down here at 10 for you?
I'll tell you in just a second, but I want to preface one thing real quick, right? I think we're all going to be faced with the choice, right? After the top three, let's just say, for example, that Isaiah Spiller is in the tier one, right? And you're going to see in most rookie mocks that you do that it's going to be those three are the first off the board, you know, unless Spiller just bombs at his pro day and runs like a 4.7 or some crazy thing, right? We're all going to be faced with the choice that are you going to go with a bigger back who can be potentially a one or two down, you know, banger, yeah, that might not be on the field and get that opportunity to start? Or are you, you know, you're at a fork in the road. You go with the bigger guys who may not start, good, solid backup RB2s on a team, or you're going to be faced with the other fork, a bunch of pass catching backs to help me on my PPR team. That's the kind of the way that I look at it. Right. Sure. So for me, I'm a size guy when it comes to running back. So that's why I've got White and Robinson in my tier two, because I think potentially if given the opportunity, they could be a lead back on a team, if given the opportunity. If not, they're going to be really two solid guys that I'm going to want on my roster to just wait for that injury for them to get an opportunity. So in tier three, I've got a bunch of guys, all right? Half of them are pass catchers. Half of them are bigger guys that have some physicality. I am not I'm probably the lowest person you're going to find on Rashad White. All right. I just did a mock draft with John Lobb and Matt Hicks, and he was number four taken. And I see he's number four. I really, really question his running in between the tackle ability. You know, you want to talk about, Tom, we were just talking about these older prospects. Well, let's just throw Rashad White in there. He was a JUCO product who didn't really have any production profile at all until this year. Twitter was littered with all of these great tweets with him catching the ball down the sideline, and he is a fantastic pass catcher. I have real concerns. I did a breakdown film detail on my YouTube channel, you know, watching him run in between the tackles. And I think just given his size and his build, I question his physicality really being able to run in between the tackles. And I think a lot of people don't look at him in that way. They want him as the PPR back. And that's great. I mean, because he was very productive. But I'm not sure if given the opportunity, he is going to be a guy who is going to be able to carry the rock in between the tackles. I think it admirably he's going to be able to run the ball, maybe fill in. But you look at his lower half and you watch the film that I made. He doesn't break tackles. He's shifty. He's got quick feet. I know his athletic profile and the combine was great. And that just vaulted him up into this stratosphere of, oh, he can catch the ball. Look at his athletic testing. He must be good. And I'm looking forward to talking about Pierre Strong because I've got the same concerns about him as a film guy. I'm all about running in between the tackles, right? If you want to be a Kenneth Gainwell, if you want to be a Nyheim Hines and all that, that's what I think Rashad White is. And it's just like Nyheim Hines. You remember when Nyheim Hines started for the Colts, they tried to run him inside for the first year or two. They tried to. Kenny Gainwell is an Eagles guy. I was never a fan of him because he's not strong enough to run in between the tackles. And look what happened to him. I fear that Rashad White is going to end up like a Kenneth Gainwell. And I really question his physical play strength running in between the tackles. So that concerns me. So in this particular tier, I'm looking at what my other options are. Give me James Cook all day, every day, playing for the SEC, a kid who has had limited production early in his career, has averaged over 6 yards a carry. He is going to be not a bell cow back. He's not going to be a one or two down back. But this kid can catch the ball as good, if not better, than Rashad White. If you watch the playoff games last year, the kid was explosive as hell in the Orange Bowl. And then he ran for, you know, 8 yards a carry against Bama in the freaking, you know, championship game. So I look at James Cook as a guy who can catch the ball. I think his main role when he goes to the NFL is going to be a pass catching back. But I feel that if he is on a team, and the main guy on that backfield who runs, you know, who bangs the ball the first or second, you know, down gets injured, he would admirably fill in and be a great option to carry the rock for 3 or 4 games, has the physicality, doesn't have the best contact balance and physical strength as well. But I don't know, give me the guy that's played in the SEC versus the Pac-12 player who looked, you know, really good on film. And if you go back and watch my YouTube channel, there were so many missed freaking tackles on this guy. And he was, you know, so people look at Rashad White to me as a guy who has a ton of production, who can catch the ball. And that's about as far as it gets. And people make an opinion. I'm all about running in between the tackles. You got to give me both. And I don't know if he can do that.
Yeah. Let's kind of talk about that with, let's group these guys the way you have, right? Let's go James Cook, Tyler Beatty, Rashad White and Kyren Williams. Is that kind of what separates them? Obviously they're in the same tier, right? So things can change, but for right now, James Cook, if someone above him gets hurt, you feel like he can fill in, he can carry the rocket and maybe get those double digit carries. Whereas maybe Beatty is not quite at that level given size, maybe Kyren Williams with the size that he came in. Is that why those guys are a little bit lower? Let's kind of,
yeah, I think so. I mean, Tyler Beatty played in the SEC and just tore it up this year. I mean, there's something to be said about that. The kid's explosive as hell. I mean, he's shifty. I think he caught more balls than Rashad White, but like nobody wants to talk about that. And I'm curious as to why. I mean, he doesn't have the prototypical size. I mean, he's 5'8", 197. The odds are against him. He's under 200 pounds. Rashad White's 6 foot, you know, 214. So he's got the bigger size. I get it and understand. Tyler Beatty is built very strong, and I think he would be a great complement. I think the Cook, Beatty, and Rashad White are not going to be asked to run in between the tackles. They're all going to be satellite backs. and they're going to be asked to do that. And I just prefer Cook and Beatty over Rashad White.
This is the story of the one. As a maintenance engineer, he hears things differently. To the untrained ear, everything on his shop floor might sound fine, but he can hear gears grinding or a belt slipping. So he steps in to fix the problem at hand before it gets out of hand. And he knows Granger's got the right product he needs to get the job done, which is music to his ears. Call, click Granger.com, or just stop by. Granger, for the ones who get it done.
What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
Sure. And then maybe on the flip side, let's go Jerome Ford, Tyler Allgeier, and maybe Damian Pierce can get lumped into that conversation as kind of the bigger backs,
right?
Bigger-ish, right, compared to these other guys. How do you contrast some of those guys, especially because Jerome Ford, he's at the top of your list here, but maybe it sounded like you had some question marks earlier when we were talking about tier two.
Well, yeah, I mean, again, he is a guy who has certainly got the lateral ability, another guy who can catch the ball. I mean, you watch his Cincinnati film. He caught a lot of vertical passes last year, which is fantastic. I mean, so he can be used. He's a little on the smaller side, but I'm going to take him. I mean, Tyler Allgeier was somebody I really liked, but I'm concerned about his lateral ability. He and Damian Price look like the same player. My last video I just put on my YouTube channel was a film breakdown of Damian Price, and I suggest you maybe go look at it. I mean, I break it down by trait, by vision, by pass catching, by contact balance and stuff. I mean, he's just a banger who I don't think has a lot of creativity in his running ability. I think he's more of just a guy I'm going to go and run into open space up the middle. I don't think he's going to be, you know, you really can't win on the outside. But I think Tyler Beatty I've seen win on the outside. I've seen Jerome Ford win by going on the outside. So if you're going to run an outside zone and you need to get to the edge, Damian Pierce isn't going to be the guy that's going to get there. And I question that, Tyler Allgeier isn't either. So those two backs to me are going to have to really play in between the tackles, you know, maybe a slight outside zone outside the right tackle, but it's not going to be some spread zone where these guys are going to be running laterally for, you know, 10 or 15 yards, asking them to pick the hole and move forward. That's just not their game. They're more of a give me the ball, you know, in the pistol formation and let me run right up the middle and try and get some yards. So, and Kyren Williams, I guess, is the big thing with him is, again, a guy who has been really productive at Notre Dame, but that speed score and burst score and all that has just scared everybody off. And the analytic guys, they're all out on him, you know? So, you know, when you're that slow, when you're that size and didn't get to 200 pounds and you can't run a 4.4, I mean, I think the odds are against you that it's probably not going to work out for you. All these guys, I mean, Ford's faster, Beatty's faster. I mean, so I think that, you know, maybe lends to them being off the board first. So this tier three, I think, is the round 4 or 5 crew for me.
What can save Kyren Williams? Like, if he gets Michael Carter early fourth, is he back in the conversation for you or still going to be pretty low?
Yeah, I mean, we'll have to see where he lands and see what kind of opportunity he gets. Sure. Okay. You know, because like I said, I'm not going to hold the 40 time against him. I mean, he fell down my ranks a little bit because I think, I mean, explosion and athleticism matters in the running back position. And he obviously just didn't show that in the drills and the 40 time. But he's a great pass protector. You know, he's tough.
He plays bigger than his size. I think he plays bigger. A lot of us thought he was going to come in right at that 200, 203, maybe even. And then it just didn't quite happen, obviously, but he does not. Him and Beatty, you know, I'll make that same case for Beatty. They mm-hmm. they get have some pop for these quote unquote smaller backs.
That's right, and so and they're physical for their size, right? And going back to Rashad White, that is my concern. If you watch again the film I made, when he runs in between tackles, he runs upright.
And so upright.
He gets pounded when he doesn't have contact balance. And so again, it's the narrative of people, you know, in the echo chamber of loving his pass catching ability. They immediately think PPR dynasty. Oh, and oh my God, look at his 40 time. He's athletic. He's got to be a winner. And like, I just take it deeper than that. I have to watch these kids run in between the tackles and see what kind of vision, what kind of power they have. If you want to talk about Pierre Strong, since he's on the list here, I mean, I know he's like the darling right now, but when you go watch his film, there's one thing I want you to watch. And to me, play strength is huge, right? You have to have, just look at his lower body. Katie Flowers, she's a big Debbie girl. I don't know if you guys know mm-hmm. Katie Flowers. Yep. Mm-hmm. Yep. She's on my Slack chat all the time. And she's got this phrase that I just love. She's like, for a running back for me ever to be on my roster, he better have a steak ass. That's what she calls it, a steak ass. So she'll post pictures of you know, like Branson Robinson is a guy who's an incoming freshman, right? Who is going to Georgia.
Ginormous.
Right? And she'll post a picture and say, this is a running back. So I was kind of giggling to myself because I'm looking at Pierre Strong and I'm thinking to myself, oh my God, I'm thinking of Katie. Go watch the YouTube channels on this kid. I know he's fast, but I'm concerned about his competition level. He goes down and folds like a lawn chair on contact, right? So he has the shiftiness. He has all of that, but man, he's really light on the bottom half of his body, and I don't see him driving many piles and breaking a lot of tackles. And I don't care how fast you are, you still got to know how to play football, and you've got to have the requisite size and power and on your lower half to really play a running back. And I just don't think he has it personally.
Robbie, take the arrow out of your heart.
Well, I'm just being honest, you know.
Yeah, I mean, that's what we're here for, and I think. I think anybody who watches Pierre Strong's tape, the reason you get excited about him is that I don't want to overuse the word burst, but when I look at a lot of these guys, he gets downhill quick. And if he is given a lane, he's gone. And I think he's one of those shiftier guys that he can make plays. He is creative, right? But at the cost, right? Whenever we have these backs, if you're really good at this one thing, it feels like, can you be good at both? And that's why he's in this tier, is that we have questions about his play strength. And he does go down. You know, I have it down here. He goes down on first contact often. But he is obviously anybody who's watched the tape, you can see he's an athlete. Combine backs it up, which is exciting. And it sounds like for you, a big thing is play strength and size, which I think you see a lot of these successful running backs, they probably have a little bit of that. But for a lot of other people, it's probably that home run ability, right? So it's juxtaposing those two mindsets, right?
Sure. Saying,
does he have the home run ability? I think so. And I think, you know, great, great point on the level of competition. I think when I see him do that against NDSU, one of the top FCS schools, again, we're not talking about SEC, so there's still a drop off, but what we're talking about as good as you can get at the FCS level, at least.
Oh, without a doubt.
We know all about North Dakota State. You don't have to talk to us about it.
Yeah, yeah. It might be a sore taste in y'all's mouth, but
yeah.
Yeah, that's fine. So, we got a first four in the Super Bowl.
Exactly. So I definitely understand that he's not the complete prospect, and that's why he's not going to be in tier one or two for me either. But he's definitely an interesting guy that, again, mm-hmm. we go to draft capital, we get this athleticism, we get his ability, returns kicks, speedy, you know, those kind of things are exciting. Absolutely needs to work on his functional strength. And that's not something that's, hey, you can't do it now. That's absolutely something they can grow into. But if you don't see it at the college level, you're projecting. So right. I get why he's there for you.
Yeah, and the other thing too, I'm sorry, just one last point on him was his pass protection was horrendous, right? I mean, Dynasty Nerds has about four or five games of him out on YouTube, if you just put in Pierre Strong, mm-hmm.
yep.
and they do these great film drives where even when there's passes, you get to see what this kid does in pass protection. And it's not pretty. I mean, he seems lost out there. He seems like he takes like a whiff on somebody and doesn't know where to go. And a couple times he got blown up pretty bad. So it could be a liability. Again, I think it's the overall play strength. When you just look at his build, I don't care what his measurables are. I'm just staring, looking at him on the field, and you can just see that his lower legs, he doesn't have that stamina. I don't know, but I mean, maybe he can develop it. I don't know, but I'm going to take a kid that's played in the Big Ten. I'm going to take an SEC sure. kid that's been against better competition.
You're going to take Joe Mixon over Melvin Gordon. And when you look at their lower half,
the lower half,
it's just it's like, what's the Somalian doing next to that Samoan guy? I don't understand what's going on. Feed that guy, do some calf raises, Melvin. Still good, exactly. But you know. So, Robbie, I know you love Pierre Strong. Do you have him above guys like Jerome Ford, James Cook, Tyler Beatty?
No, I have him in that tier for me. Man, it's so tough because this tier is big, and I'd say we're similar. There's some players I might have a little bit differently, but it's tough because you almost want to split this tier and rank them by who's going to draft a pass catching third down back and who's going to draft that. For example, Tyler Allgeier, when I watched him, and I've actually heard this on a couple other podcasts, which it makes you feel like, hey, yeah, you're watching what other people are seeing. He reminds me of Alexander Mattison, right? I didn't see the same speed that a lot of other people were talking about. He's saying at BYU's stuff, he's running a 4.39 or something like that. And I was like, man, if he runs that's going to be really shocking.
I know.
especially at his size, right? He's 220, yeah. Man. Like that would be cooking.
It's like Kingpin when he bowls 15 frames instead of 10. He's like, I got a 279 average. What's going on? He's running the 35 yard dash.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So you almost have two separate lists in this tier, and so now I'm trying to just rank. It's hard for me to rank a guy like Tyler Beatty up against Tyler Allgeier because teams aren't going to look at them the same. They're going to be off the board for some because they're two, in my opinion, opposite prospects. So it is a tricky game. But, yeah, I'd have Pierre Strong in this area because he does a lot of the things I think Tyler Beatty does well. He does a lot of things. The reasons you like Rashad White, he does a lot of those things well. But it sounds like for Brandon and for definitely a thing for all of us to look at is, hey, size and strength is a big piece of success. I mean, look at your top – you know, eight backs that we have right in fantasy right now between Dalvin Cook, between Derrick Henry, Joe Mixon, Zeke Elliott. I'm probably missing a whole bunch, but other than maybe an Austin Eckler, who again plays bigger than his size, they're all very strong breaking tackles. And so that's a fair assessment. And that's maybe why some people, I'm not jumping on this down class, but that's probably why people are quote unquote down on this class, because it doesn't feel like it has that full complement of guys that can do it all that you have in Breece, Kenneth Walker, and some will say Isaiah Spiller.
Right. Yeah. And I think you're going to find out next year that we're going to be in the same boat.
Don't say that.
Crushing your dreams already, Tom.
It's like, you know how I got that Debbie Downer, picture of you, Robbie?
Yes.
Don't make
me
put Brandon's face on it.
Oh man.
2023 RB class. This is Debbie Downer deep dive. What's going on?
Hey, there's two or three really good ones just like this class, but man, then you're getting, you know, into some projection. It's the Bijan Robinson effect.
As a non-Debbie guy, it's always a year away, right? Like Cody Kutzer, who's a part of TFA in one of our Debbie leagues, he went full productive struggle, right? He's going all Debbie guys, going all rookies. And you look at some of these names that he got, Spencer Rattler and Charlie Kohler and some of these guys, you know, they're not the prospects that you thought a year ago. And I know that's an easy cop out that's going to happen in any class. And in this 2023 has those high ends. So we won't dive too far deep in the 2023 class. Let's save that for another episode, push them towards your channel, because I know you're going to be touching on them here pretty soon. Let's go to tier four. We have Jerrion Ealy. We have Kennedy Brooks and Hassan Haskins. We're kind of getting down into the depths of this class, but I do think sometimes this is where you find maybe not hidden gems like James Robinson's, because I don't want to make that case that we're going to find those kind of guys every year. But are there guys that if somebody above them gets injured, they're third on the depth chart, and now they're getting some touches later on? Who do you see in this class as kind of being a guy that can maybe pop if given the opportunity?
I mean, of all of those guys, I'm probably going to go with Kennedy Brooks. if, you know, out of those three, if I had to. I mean, I think he's got some, I think he's been a little underrated. I think he's gone under the radar. I mean, Ely didn't really, this, the speed isn't really there. Again, he's smaller. He's kind of like the same as Beatty. You know, Haskins looks like a grinder. He looks like more, it's very similar. He just ran in a great system for Michigan this year. But I think all of these guys are just long shots. I mean, in reality, we get six or seven running backs every yep. year that go to our dynasty rosters. And we're down here in the depths of the late teens and the early 20s. I mean, any one of these guys could hit. I mean, I would put Keontae Ingram as a guy that I really liked. I mean, do you want to talk about a guy who flashed as a freshman at Texas who I have so many shares of him in my Debbie leagues after his first year. That's right. A bust. Ty Chandler went to North Carolina. He's probably another guy in this tier that's not probably far behind. I don't have my ranks pulled up here in front of me or whatever, but I think all of these guys are just all just long shots unless they get the draft capital. Because sure. if you go back, like we talked about early in the show, the NFL scouts usually get it right in the end. And draft capital matters because they're going to be given a bigger opportunity. So, you know, you go back and look at the round 4, 5, 6 picks 3 years ago, they're all going to be replaced probably with this year's round 4 or 5, 6 round players, hoping that maybe they find a diamond in the rough. Because if you've been on a team for 3 years as a 5th or 6th round draft pick and we haven't heard your name in dynasty rosters, we're most likely not going to. And that's just what the reality is of it.
So I have to drop John Kelly finally. Is that what we're saying?
Oh my goodness! Who's John Kelly?
Yeah, teams don't want to pay elite running back second contracts.
That's right.
I mean, it's tough.
Yeah.
So you brought up Kennedy Brooks. I kind of see shades of Jordan Howard. It's like there's a flash. There he is, kind of. Mm-hmm. I don't think he's going to contribute much to the air at all, but he could carve out a nice role. Somebody gets hurt.
That's right.
So why is he in tier 4 instead of tier 3 for you, I guess?
I just think it comes down to, you know, lateral ability. You know, I really, the elusiveness to me is probably, you know, the vision and what you do with the line of scrimmage. He would be at the top of tier 4. He's right behind Ely. I mean, Ely was an explosive player for Ole Miss, and I've got Kennedy Brooks right there at number 15. I mean, you know, watching a little bit more film on him, could he, you know, jump up in that tier 3? Sure. If he gets day, you know, 4, early day 5 or early round 5 draft capital and lands in a really good spot, and I'm like, okay, well, that might change my feeling a little bit. You know what I mean? But if he ends up being a 7th round depth piece, he has no shot.
Yeah. So how, out of these guys in tier 3 and tier 4, who do you see yourself walking away from, you know, drafts with the most of and the least of?
Oh, I'm probably in this whole thing here. I'm going to probably take Tyler Beatty, James Cook. I think I'm going to go, and it's going to go against the grain of what I really always talk about is size matters. But I think for these particular players, I'm going to go. I would even take Rashad White if he lands in a good spot, even though I don't like him running between the tackles because, you know, I don't see Damian Pierce. I know a lot of people like him right now, but from watching him film, he looks like just like a grinder. He's not creative and Pierce Strong, unless I see something different, I don't know. I'm going to lean, I think, on the pass catchers and maybe try and get myself a Nyheim Hines type, because I think a lot of these bigger backs just don't have the lateral ability that, like Elijah Mitchell, for me, runs in a system that is sure. ideal. Right now, if he ended up on the Chicago Bears, you know, would he have been as productive? I'm not 100% sure. I think he could be a product of that just zone system. That Shanahan system has just always produced backs with the system. Not taking anything away from Elijah Mitchell, but if another guy had been drafted by the 49ers and put in that spot, like a big miss for me, just not to get off topic, was Trey Sermon. I love Trey Sermon last year.
Oh, and man. I just Robbie, just pour one out.
Yeah, that was tough. And I'm still let me jump in with you. I'm still not convinced it's a miss because he didn't get the opportunity, right?
And I agree.
He doesn't get the opportunity. If maybe it's part him, but he had one game and ran for, you know, 86 or whatever it was yards on 18 touches. So I'm going to throw that one up in the air as we don't know, but there's mm-hmm. probably a reason he's not seeing the field. So it's also probably an L on us. But I'm just saying.
Yeah, I mean, he was so good for Ohio State. Now, at the very beginning of the show, you told you I saw you running down my things on my Twitter handle and intangibles matter. So I say that all the time, especially when it comes to the quarterbacks. Like, that's something none of us know. Intangibles matter for all of these players. We don't know how smart they are. We don't know how
who's going to their birthday parties.
Yeah.
Nobody goes to their birthday parties. It's a big deal.
Yeah, exactly. Sign. Like, for a perfect example that I feel like going to talk about the Philadelphia Eagles real quick, they missed the mark on Jalen Reagor, not just because he wasn't the athlete that they thought he did. So they missed on his tape review, but I think they also missed on his intangibles and what he was as a person, because he's a big Twitter head and the fans here got in his head. And I think that has a lot to do with him losing his confidence playing on the field. So for all of these players, that's what I think the combine, they get most out of the combine, these NFL rosters, when they can sit and talk to these young men, talk to them, see, you know, like Carson Strong, a lot of bad things came out about Carson Strong, whether it's right or not or wrong, that he didn't even know half the playbook. It, like, they were throwing him concepts and he didn't really understand them. Now, I don't know if that's people bullshit and putting out bad tweets on Twitter or not, but if that's the case, those are the kind of things I think that we don't know about any of these players. So it's
also funny because about 3 days before the draft, you start hearing bad things come out about players because it's the teams that are leaking it that like him to try and get him to fall.
Yeah.
It's so funny. Like, when you get really close to the draft, trying to be like, is that true? Or is that bullshit? I don't know what's going on.
But going back to Trey Sermon, I'm wondering, right? He had the physical skills. I feel like he had the lateral ability. He definitely had the physicality, definitely had the contact balance, definitely had the pass catching chops. Was it because of what's upstairs? Was he not able to comprehend the schemes? Like, we would never know that. So he could be maybe not the sharpest tool in the shed and have all the physical ability, but then goes to that complicated 49ers offense. And he's like, oh, what the fuck is that? I'm running the wrong gaps. I don't know what I'm supposed to do. I mean, you can't tell me in the NFL that hasn't happened to a player that had physical traits that maybe they just couldn't, you know, put it all together. I mean, you get a playbook, it's like this thick and you're like, holy shit, what am I looking at here? You know? So
you throw COVID in, and then things are virtual. This is going to be like the first normalish off season that rookies have had in 2 years. So that'll be good for these rookies. And it'll also be good for the guys that were drafted the last 2 years, because it's going to be more normal for them.
But to your point on that, I mean, I'm not giving up my shares yet. He's in the doghouse there. And now with Elijah Mitchell, his time there is up probably, but I hope they don't draft someone in the fourth round, because then he's dead at that point.
That was going to be my point, that, you know, I don't think the story's written, because it may be half Trey Sermon, but it's also Kyle Shanahan. Because if there's one coach where you're like, man, this guy will draft somebody and then decide I'm not playing him for a while. We've seen this before. We saw this with Joe Williams, a fourth round pick, didn't even pan out at all. We see this with Brandon Ayuk. We've seen this with Dante Pettis, right? This is a definitely part Shanahan, where if he has an issue with whatever it is, maybe it's the smarts, maybe it's, you know, Trey Sermon, someone who has to go through a lot of adversity. He had losses in his life, in his family. He had to, you know, transfer because he's competing and not getting the playing time in Oklahoma. So I think it's kind of a mix of all what we're saying, but let's not make this the Trey Sermon podcast.
Yeah.
I could talk forever on him, because I have a couple of shares, to put it lightly.
Right, no more sermons, Robbie. Let's get to it.
Hey, he's good for one every show. For one every show. Let's go into some superlatives, because I feel like this is the fun part. We did this last year with Angelo, right?
I think we did it with everybody. Angelo was fun, though. Yeah. Because he kept on trying to – it was Jalen Waddle. I was like, the answer is Jalen Waddle, bro. Right, it's Jalen Waddle.
Absolutely. You can't use the same running back twice for these, okay, Brandon? But let's start out with some superlatives. Let's start with best runner in this class.
I got to go Breece Hall.
Okay.
Okay.
Let's go most scheme-dependent running back. You kind of hit on this a little bit, maybe Tom's conversation, but maybe you're picking someone else.
Yeah, I was, you know, I mean, after our discussion, I mean, Walker sounds like he should be the guy, but I feel like that's a cop-out.
Did I turn people? Wow, with scheme argument. Okay.
Well, I think you really did. I mean, again, if you look at the stats, I mean, he played in the gap system his first 2 years and he really didn't excel. And then here he goes into a zone system and here he is the number two back. So I guess I'm going to have to say him.
Okay. which I think is super interesting. That's definitely something I'm going to kind of dive into a little bit here as we go through and get to the NFL draft. Let's go with best pass catcher in this class.
I'm going to go.
A lot of them.
You don't want to say it. You don't want to say it, but you're going to say it.
Let's see.
All right, I'll go with White.
He's so dejected with that answer.
I'll go with White. Because I have Cook is another answer. So
okay, a little strategy here.
Yeah,
okay, a little
strategy.
Best pass protector.
Oh, Brian Pierre Robinson. Strong. Yeah, Pierre Strong. Yeah. Brian Robinson.
Okay. Yep. Biggest sleeper. So this is your tier three or tier four guys. And I thought it was interesting you threw in Keontae Ingram, not to go back a ton, but he's a name I've heard popping up that I haven't dove in. I've got through most of the list that we talked about today, but Keontae Ingram's one I need to dive back in on.
I'm going to go with Tyler Beatty. He's been one of my favorites for a long time. I'm going to go with him getting round four draft capital. And he was so good playing in the SEC. Tough. I know he's undersized. It's everything against me, but I just can't go with these bigger backs. I just can't.
I'm going Jerome Ford there.
Okay. Yeah. I like Jerome Ford. That would be probably mine as well. I love that answer because we go an hour talking about size and all that. And it's okay though, because you said, hey, some of these guys you're going to zig while others are zagging. And even though you are that's kind of quote unquote size guy, right? He runs bigger than his size for sure. Let's go with highest bust potential.
So this is tier two or higher. Oh, tier two or higher. Okay.
Yes,
because I was going to say Jerome Ford. I was going to kind of go against what you guys thought.
Okay.
I'm going to say probably Brian Robinson. As much as I like him, I can't pick him because I've already said pass protection, right?
Ooh.
So, I'll go with Isaiah Spiller.
Okay.
I'm going to go with Isaiah Spiller.
What scares you again about Spiller? If he were to bust, and it's not draft capital, what's holding him back?
You know what? I'll change my answer. I'll say Zamir White. I'll say he, because I like Spiller better. I'll say Zamir White because he doesn't maybe get the draft capital that we think, and he
maybe
just
pass catching a little bit.
He's not really much of a pass catcher. He's more of just a banger. So I think he has the bust potential. I mean, if you look at mock drafts right now, he's not really getting out of the top five or six running backs. I mean, the NFL is going to lean towards that size, that athleticism, but I could see him maybe, he's got little clunky feet. He's pretty quick and nimble, but he also can get taken down pretty easily,
Sure. I know this is kind of cheating, but let's go back to the Jerome Ford answer. Two guys that maybe Tom and I are excited to see that ceiling. You can kind of see a floor there. What scares you about Ford?
Play strength.
Okay.
Same kind of thing with Rashad White. I think he has the ability. He's shifty. I'm just worried about his contact balance and his play strength. He reminds me kind of a Jamar Jefferson type player. That's probably why. I mean, he can catch the ball. He's got burst. He's got speed. I mean, there's no doubt about it if he gets to the second level. But these kids have to win in the line of scrimmage in the first 10 yards. So that's where it's won. This game is won and lost for the majority of these running backs. Yeah, they're once in a while, they're going to hit a hole in a seam and take it to the distance, and we're all going to get excited. But typically, these running backs have to nimble their way through a line of scrimmage and get to that second level by making two or three guys miss. And you've got to have the play strength. I mean, you just look at Javonta Williams, right? You see him, a lot of his breakout runs back in North Carolina was after he shed five or six tackles and made a guy miss with a dead leg in the second level, made a linebacker miss. And then all of a sudden he's got the burst and acceleration and he's gone, taking chunk yards of 30 or 40 yards, right? That was his game, but man, that dude's thick in the lower half. And I'm just concerned Jerome Ford is just a little bit light. And, and the reason I'm going to call him, not a bust potential, but I think he's higher viewed in the Devy community than what the NFL community is. And I think that's something that I've learned over the last couple years is, as much as you maybe hate the ESPN guys and Mel Kiper's a dork or whatever, these guys know so much more than we know. They are talking to scouts. They've got staffs who know what they're doing. And, usually when Kiper and those guys go into a draft, with their top 10 boards, there's usually not a lot of big surprises. And, you know, Jeremiah, all those guys. And if you really look at a lot of those guys' lists in the top 10, you're not going to see Jerome Ford's name on there very often.
Who are three guys that you like to follow? If we're talking to listeners, hey, there's a ton of mocks out there. Some of them can mislead you. One of those names for me is Daniel Jeremiah. I think Kevin Steele of our channel was talking about how he was on Tutu Atwell going early, even though the rest of the world thinks it's crazy. NFL has the buzz on this guy's, you know, big playability. And what does he do? He goes in the second round of the Rams. So he's a guy for me. What are maybe a couple names that you can toss out?
I like Matt Waldman on YouTube. You know, he's not one of the primary guys. So I tend to look to NFL mockdraftdatabase.com, right?
Okay.
And they take basically every mock draft on the internet and basically put them together and give you a consensus big board. And that usually, over looking over that for the last few years, it really gives you a good idea of the way these guys are being valued in mock drafts. Now, there's a lot of guys doing mock drafts that probably don't really know what they're doing, you know, as far as mock drafts. But, you know, it includes all the ones from CBS Sportsline, all the analysts and stuff from NFL.com and bunch it all together. So, you know, I mean, ESPN, I look at all. There's probably five or six different sites out there, and I peruse them all the time and see which guys are rising and which ones are falling. And because I'm not going to pretend that I'm smarter than them, you know, and I use them to validate kind of what I see on the field. So I guess that's the answer to that question.
Yeah. Tom, I don't know about you, but I feel smarter. I feel smarter after this. A little less Skip Bayless-like.
I do. I feel much smarter. I'm going to walk into jail tomorrow and I'm going to be like, get the hell out of my way, mother. I know all this shit.
Hey, Tom, any parting thoughts on the class? Any parting thoughts on running backs? I know you and I will dive deeper into these guys. We're going to kind of give folks the kind of 360 on the backgrounds, colleges, heights, weights, all that stuff. This was kind of just the general overview. We didn't have time to kind of list out all that stuff. So listeners who are looking for, hey, where did this guy play? What was his production? What conference was he in? All that fun stuff. We're going to be diving into these guys in detail after we get the overviews done. Tom, anything else before we wrap this up?
You know, I feel better about tier three than I did going into the show.
Good.
I like James Cook. Like Taylor Beatty. I still like Jerome Ford, even though Brandon wants to, you know, stab me in the neck with a knife. It's fine. But he doesn't hate him that much because he still has him ranked seventh. So it's not like,
that's right.
He hates him. So it's just, he has flaws and everybody in tier three has flaws, but I was more so looking at all of the flaws for everybody as opposed to the positives. So I guess maybe the grass will be greener for me for tier three.
Absolutely.
But that's why I have a bunch of second round picks for these guys.
Use them when you want. Trade them for whatever else if you don't want to use them. Build capital. It's always building value, right? That's the name of the game.
That's right.
Build.
Cool. Well, Brandon, loved having you on. That is way better than we could have ever imagined. And Tom and I, again, would just be talking figureheads, looking up half these things. We've dove into the tape. And have our ideas, but it's great to hear from someone who's been doing it for more than just, you know, the past 2.5 months. So let's tell people what you have coming up. I've been hearing about this Debbie Summit. Talk to us a little bit about that and anything else you have going on.
I'm really excited about the Debbie Summit. It's an idea that I came up with probably back in October of last year, and I wanted to do an online event. It's going to be a 6-hour live stream event on Sunday, May 22nd, and it's going to be twofold. It's going to be first a 6-hour live feed to introduce Debbie and C2C to the people who are out there playing Dynasty. It's like, as we call it, I've got a flyer. I put it out on the tweet, the next step for Dynasty fans, because there's a ton of people out there that are new to Debbie or a little scared of Debbie, scared of C2C. They're a little nervous to get into it. And then secondly, we're just going to do a big summit and do like our ranks show. We're going to do a big mock draft at the end. I've got a ton of great guests lined up. It's going to be an annual event. We're going to be raising money for the Ukraine refugees. We're going to be selling hats and shirts with all proceeds going to help these poor people that have been displaced out in Europe. So I'm really, really excited about it. You're going to be seeing a ton of stuff on Twitter about it. We're going to be recording a show. It's going to be myself, the campus to Canton crew, and Matt Hicks from the Rookie Big Board. The three of us are going to be the lead guys on it. We've got a lot of our guests, you know, Matt Waldman, Ray Garvin, I've reached out to. He's a tentative. So we're going to be trying to reach all of the big Debbie guys and see if we can't land some big fish as guests. And so I'm really excited about it.
Yeah. Tell everybody again when that is.
It's on Sunday, May 22nd.
May 22nd.
Okay. Yeah, it's a Sunday afternoon. We're going to do probably 12 to 6.
Well, I am your target market there. I'm the one that plays in the very small Debbie leagues. It's Debbie 1-2. It's like I'm just dipping my toe in. So that's something that I'm going to be really interested to hear more about, because it is fun to kind of like learn about these prospects. And I think it just helps you become a better overall. You talk about the next step for dynasty players. It helps you become a more well-rounded individual. You know these players longer than 2 months before the draft happens.
So. Right.
I'm excited to listen to that. So, Brandon, love having you on. You guys can find him at Devi Deep Dive on Twitter. Again, he's the host of Devi Deep Dive podcast, creator of the Devi Dashboard. YouTube, you can check him out as well. Devi to Dynasty Football. He has a ton of player profiles for these rookies coming out. He's talking about his tiers. He has a really good one about the wide receivers. So if you like this running backs conversation, he goes solo for a lot of minutes talking about the wide receivers, and it's great. I know how hard talking to yourself can be, so that's very impressive. But guys, we will be back next week. We're going to be talking wide receivers with Angelo. He's bringing him back from last year. Loved the conversation that we had with him. So we're going to be diving into the wide receiver class. You'll have Tom, myself, and Angelo. So until next time, see you. Someday the weller man come to bring us sugar and tea and rum. One day when the tumbling is done, we'll take our leave and go. We had not been 2 weeks from shore when down under our right whale bore, the captain called all hands and swore he'd take that whale in tow. Soon may the weller man come to bring us sugar and tea.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.